stumbled off the track and followed the trail of broken bushes. Rincewind had learned that hauling on the reins only had the effect of making his arms ache. The only way to stop the little horse when he didn't want to be stopped was probably to get off, run ahead, and dig a trench in front of him. Once again, the riders came up behind Rincewind and thudded past, foam streaming from the horse's mouths. "Excuse me, am I on the right road for And they were gone. He caught up with them 10 minutes later in a thicket of mountain ash, milling around uncertainly while their leader shouted at them. "I say, can anyone tell me, is it..." he ventured. And then he saw why they'd stopped. They'd run out of forwards. The ground fell away into a canyon, a few patches of grass and a handful of bushes clinging to the very nearly sheer drop. Snowy's nostrils flared, and without even pausing, he continued down the slope. He should have skidded, Rincewind saw. In fact, he should have dropped. The slope was almost vertical. Even mountain goats would only try it roped together. Stones bounced around him, and a few of the larger ones managed to hit him on the back of the neck, but Snowy trotted downwards at the same deceptive speed that he used on the flat. Rincewind settled for hanging on and screaming. Halfway down, he saw the wild herd gallop along the canyon, skid around a rock, and disappear between the cliffs. Snowy reached the bottom in a shower of pebbles and paused for a moment. Rincewind risked opening an eye. The little horse's nostrils flared again as it looked down the narrow canyon. It stamped a hoof uncertainly, then it looked at the vertiginous far wall only a few meters away. "Oh, no," moaned Rincewind. "Please, no." He tried to untangle his legs, but they'd met right under the horse's stomach and twisted their ankles together. He must be able to do something to gravity, he told himself, as Snowy trotted up the cliff as though it wasn't a wall but merely a sort of vertical floor. The corks on his hat brim banged against his nose. And ahead, above, was an overhang. "Oh, no, please, no, please don't." He shut his eyes. He felt Snowy draw to a halt and breathed a sigh of relief. He risked a look down, and the huge hooves were indeed standing on solid, flat rock. There were no corks hanging in front of Rincewind's hat. In dread and slowly mounting terror, he turned his eyes to what they'd always thought of as upwards. There was solid rock above him as well, only it was a long way up or down, and the corks were all hanging upwards or downwards. Snowy was standing on the underside of the overhang, apparently enjoying the view. He flared his nostrils again and shook his mane. "He'll fall off," Rincewind thought. "Any minute now he'll realize he's upside down and he'll fall off, and from this height a horse'll splat on top of me." Snowy appeared to reach a decision and set off again around the curve of the overhang. The corks swung back and hit Rincewind in the face. But, hey, all the trees had the green bits pointing up, except that they were the grey bits. Rincewind looked across the chasm at the horseman. "Good day," he said, waving his hat in the air as Snowy set off again. "I think I'm about to have a technicolour snake," he added, and threw up.
"Here, mister," someone shouted back. "Yes?" "That was a chunder."
"Right, no worries."
It turned out that this piece of land was only a narrow spur between canyons. Another sheer drop loomed up or down. But to Rincewind's relief, the horse turned aside at the brink and trotted along the edge.
"Oh, no, please."
A tree had fallen down and bridged the gulf. It was very narrow, but Snowy wheeled onto it without slowing. Both ends of the tree drummed up and down on the lip of the cliff. Pebbles began to fall away. Snowy bounced across the gap like a small ball and stepped off on the far side just before the tree trunk teetered and dropped onto the rocks.
"Oh, please, no."
There wasn't a cliff here, just a long slope of loose rocks. Snowy landed among them and flared his nostrils as the entire slope of scree began to move. Rincewind saw the herd gallop past in the narrow canyon bottom far below. Large rocks bounded alongside him as the horse continued down in his own personal landslide. One or two jumped and bounced ahead, smashing onto the canyon floor just behind the last of the herd. Numb with fear and the shaking, Rincewind looked further along the canyon. It was blind. The end was another cliff. Stone piled into stone, building a rough wall across the canyon floor. As the last boulder slammed into place, Snowy landed on top of it, almost daintily. He looked down at the penned herd, milling in confusion, and flared his nostrils. Rincewind was pretty sure horses couldn't snigger, but this one radiated an air of sniggeruity. It was 10 minutes later that the horsemen rode up. By then, the herd was almost docile. They looked at the horses, They looked at Rincewind, who grinned horribly and said, "No worries." Very slowly, he didn't fall off Snowy. He simply swiveled sideways, with his feet still twisted together, until his head banged gently on the ground.
"That was bloody great riding, mate."
"Could someone separate my ankles, please? I fear they may have fused together."
A couple of the riders dismounted and, after some effort, pulled him free. The leader looked down at him.
"Name your price for that little battler, mate," said Remorse.
Three squids, said Rincewind, muzzily.
"What, for a wiry little devil like that? He's got to be worth a couple of hundred at least."
"Three squids is all I've got."
"I reckon a few of them rocks hit him on the head," said one of the stockmen who were holding Rincewind up. "I mean, I'll buy him off you, mister," said Remorse, patiently. "Tell you what, 200 squids, a bag of tucker, and we'll set you right on the road to, where was he wanted to go, Clancy?"
"Bugger up," murmured Rincewind.
"Ah, you don't want to go to Bugger Up," said Remorse. "Nothing in Bugger Up but a bunch of wowsers and poofters."
"It's okay, I like parrots," mumbled Rincewind, who was just hoping that they would let him go so that he could hold onto the ground again.
What's Exian for going mad with terrified fatigue and collapsing in a boneless heap?" The men looked at one another.
"Isn't that snagged as a wombat's tonker?"
"No, no, that's when you chuck a twister, isn't it?" said Clancy.
"What? Struth, no. Chucking a twister's when your nose. Hang on, that's Bender Smarty."
Said Rincewind, clutching his head.
"What? Bender Smarty is when your ears get blocked underwater."
Clancy looked uncertain and then seemed to reach a decision.
"Yeah, that's right." "Nah, that's gonging like a possum's armpit, mate."
"Excuse me," said Rincewind.
"That ain't right. Gonging like a possum's armpit is when you crack a crusty. When your ears are stuffed like a mudgee's kettle after a week of Fridays, that's stuck up like Morgan's mule. Now, you're referring to happier than Morgan's mule in a chalky patch. You mean as fast as Morgan's mule after it ate Ma's crow pie?"
How fast was that exactly?" said Rincewind. They all stared at him.
"Faster than an eel in a snake pit, mate," said Clancy. "Don't you understand plain language?"
"Yeah," said one of the men. "He might be a fancy rider, but I reckon he's dumber than a..."
"Don't anyone say anything," shouted Rincewind. "I'm feeling a lot better, all right. Just all right. All right?"
He straightened his ragged robe and adjusted his hat. "Now, if you could just set me on the right road to Bugger Up, I will not trespass further on your time. You may keep Snowy. He can bed down on a ceiling somewhere."
"Oh, no, mister," said Remorse.
He reached into a shirt pocket, pulled out a bundle of notes and licked his thumb to count off 20.
"I always pays me debts. You want to stay with us a while first? We could use another rider, and it's tough going on the road by yourself. There's bush rangers about."
Rincewind rubbed his head again. Now that his various bodily organs had wobbled their way back into their approximate positions, he could get back to general, low-key, generalized dread.
"They won't have to worry about me," he mumbled. "I promise not to light fires or feed the animals. Well, I say promise. Most of the time they're trying to feed off me."
Remorse shrugged.
"Just so long as there's no more of those damn dropping bears," said Rincewind.
The men laughed.
"Drop bears? Who's been feeding you a line about drop bears?"
"What do you mean?"
"There's no such thing as drop bears. Someone must have seen you coming, mate."
"Huh? They went...
Rincewind waved his arm.
"They went boying all over the place. Great big teeth."
"I reckon he's madder than Morgan's mule, mate," said Clancy.
The group went silent.
How mad is that, then?" said Rincewind.
Clancy leaned on his saddle and looked nervously at the other men. He licked his lips.
"Well, it's..."
"Yes?"
"Well, it's...
His face twisted up.
"It's... there..."
Rincewind hinted.
"There..."
Clancy mumbled, clutching the syllable like a lifeline.
"Very..."
Keep going.
"Very mad?"
said Clancy.
"Well done. See? So much easier," said Rincewind. "Someone mentioned something about food."
Remorse nodded to one of the men, who handed Rincewind a sack.
"There's beer and veggies and stuff, and because you're a good sport, we're giving you a tin of jam, too."
"Gooseberry?"
"Yep." "And I'm wondering about your hat," said Remorse. Why's there all corks around it?
Knocks the flies out, said Rincewind.
That works, does it? Course not, said Clancy. Even it does, someone would have thought of it by now.
Yes, me, said Rincewind. No worries.
Makes you look a bit of a drongo, mate, said Clancy.
Oh, good, said Rincewind. Which way's bugger up?
Just turn left at the bottom of the canyon, mate.
That's all.
You can ask again when you meet the bush rangers.
They've got some sort of cabin or station, have they?
Just remember they'll find you if you get lost.
Really? Well, I suppose that's part of their job. Good day to you.
Good day. No worries.
The man watched Rincewind until he was out of sight.
Didn't seem very bothered, did he? He's a bit Gujaroo, if you ask me. Clancy?
Yes, boss?
You made that one up, didn't you?
Well, you bloody did, Clancy.
Clancy looked embarrassed, but then rallied.
All right, then, he said hotly. What about that one you used yesterday, as busy as a one-armed carpenter in Smackaroo?
What about it?
I looked it up in the Atlas and there's no such place, boss. There damn well is. There isn't. Anyway, no one would employ a one-armed carpenter, would they? So he wouldn't be busy, would he?
Listen, Clancy, he'd go fishing or something, wouldn't he?
Clancy, we are supposed to be carving a new language out of the wilderness here. Probably needs someone to help him bait the line, but Clancy, will you shut up and go and get the horses?
It took 20 minutes to roll enough of the rocks away, and 5 minutes after that, Clancy reported back.
Can't find the little bastard, boss, and we looked underneath all the others.
It couldn't have got past us.
Yes, it could, boss. You saw it going up those cliffs, probably miles away by now. You want I should go after that bloke?
Remorse thought about it and spat.
Nah, we got the colt back. That's worth the money.
He stared reflectively down the canyon.
You all right, boss? Clancy, after we get back to the station, go on into town and call in at the Pastoral Hotel and bring back as many corks as they got, will you? Think it'll work, boss? He was as weird as...
Clancy was pulled up by the look in his boss's eyes.
He was pretty weird, he said. Weird, yeah, but smart, too. No flies on him.
Behind them in the jumble of rocks and bushes at the end of the canyon, a drawing of a small horse became a drawing of a kangaroo and then faded into the stone. The worst thing about losing your temper with Mustrum Ridcully was that he never noticed when you did. Wizards, when faced with danger, would immediately stop and argue amongst themselves about exactly what kind of danger it was. By the time everyone in the party understood, either it had become the sort of danger where your options are so very, very clear that you instantly take one of them or die, or it had got bored and gone away. Even danger has its pride. When he was a boy, Ponder Stibbons had imagined that wizards would be powerful demigods, able to change the whole world at the flick of a finger. And then he'd grown up and found that they were tiresome old men who worried about the state of their feet, and in harm's way would even bicker about the origin of the phrase, in harm's way. It had never struck him that evolution works in all kinds of ways. There were still quite deep scars in old buildings that showed what happened when you had the other kind of wizard. His footsteps took him, almost without his being aware, along the gently winding path up the mountain. Strange creatures peered at him from the undergrowth on either side. Some of them looked like... Wizards think in terms of books, and now one crept out from the shelves of Ponder's memory. It had been given to him when he was small. In fact, he'd still got it somewhere, filed away in a cardboard box. Ponder had been that kind of child. He still had all the pieces for every game he'd ever been given. Ponder had been the kind of boy who carefully reads the label on every Hogswatch present before opening it, and notes down in a small book who it is from, and has all the thank-you letters written by tea-time. His parents had been impressed even then, realizing that they had given birth to a child who would achieve great things, or perhaps be hunted down by a righteous citizenry by the time he was 10. It had consisted of lots of small pages on a central spiral. Each one showed the head, body, or tail of some bird, fish, or animal. It was possible, for the sufficiently bored, to shuffle and turn them so that you got, say, a creature with the head of a horse, the body of a beetle, and the tail of a fish. The cover promised hours of fun, although after the first 3 minutes you couldn't help wondering what kind of person could make that kind of fun last for hours, and whether suffocating him as kindly as possible now would save the serial crime squad a lot of trouble in years to come. Ponder, however, had hours of fun. End of side 9. Side 10. Some of the things in the undergrowth looked like the pages of that book. There were birds with beaks as long as their bodies. There were spiders the size of hands. Here and there the air shimmered like water. It resisted very gently as Ponder tried to walk through it, and then let him pass. But the birds and insects didn't seem inclined to follow him. There were beetles everywhere. Eventually, by easy stages, the winding path reached the top of the mountain. There was a tiny valley there, just below the peak. At the far end was a large cave mouth lit by a blue glow within. A large beetle sang past Ponder's ear. The cave mouth opened into a cavern filled with misty blue fog. There was a suggestion of complex shadows, and there were sounds, whistles like zipping noises, the occasional thud or clang that suggested work going on somewhere in the mist. Ponder brushed aside the beetle that had landed on his cheek and stared at the shape right in front of him. It was the front half of an elephant. The other half of the elephant, balancing against all probability on the two legs at the rear end, stood a few yards away. In between was the rest of the elephant. Ponder Stibbons told himself that if you cut an elephant in half and scooped out the middle, what you would get would be, well, mess. There wasn't much mess here. Pink and purple tubes had uncoiled neatly onto a workbench. A small stepladder led up into another complexity of tubes and bulky organs. There was a general feel of methodical work in progress. This wasn't the horror of an elephant in an explosive death. This was an elephant under construction. Little clouds of white light spiraled in from all corners of the cavern, spun for a moment, and became the god of evolution, who was standing on the stepladder. He blinked at Ponder.
"Oh, it's you," he said. "One of the pointy creatures. Can you tell me what happens when I do this?"
He reached inside the echoing depths of the front half. The elephant's ears flapped.
"The ears flapped," squeaked Ponder.
The god emerged, beaming.
"It's amazing how difficult that is to achieve," he said. "Anyway, what do you think of it?"
Ponder swallowed.
"It's very good," he managed.
He took a step back, bumped into something, and turned and looked into the gaping maw of a very large shark. It was in the middle of another, well, he had to think of it as a sort of biological scaffolding. It rolled an eye at him. Behind it, a much bigger whale was being assembled.
"It is, isn't it?" said the god.
Ponder tried to concentrate on the elephant.
"Although," he said,
"yes?
Are you sure about the wheels?"
The god looked concerned.
You think they're too small? Not quite suitable for the veldt?"
Probably not.
It's very hard to design an organic wheel, you know," said the god reproachfully. "They are little masterpieces."
"You don't think just, you know, moving the legs about would be simpler?"
"Oh, we'd never get anywhere if I just copied earlier ideas," said the god. "Diversify and fill all niches. That's the ticket."
"But is lying on your side in a mud hole with your wheels spinning a very important niche?" said Ponder.
The god looked at him and then stared glumly at the half-completed elephant.
"Perhaps if I made the tires bigger," he said, hopefully, yet in a hopeless voice.
"I don't think so," said Ponder.
"Oh, you're probably right."
The little god's hands twitched.
"I don't know. I do try to diversify, but sometimes it's so difficult."
Suddenly he ran across the crowded cave towards a huge pair of doors at the far end and flung them open.
"I'm sorry, but I just have to do one," said the god. "They calm me down, you know."
Ponder caught up. The cave beyond the doors was bigger than this one and brilliantly lit. The air was full of small bright things hovering in their millions like beads on invisible strings.
"Beetles?" said Ponder.
"There's nothing like a beetle when you're feeling depressed," said the god.
He'd stopped by a large metal desk and was feverishly opening drawers and pulling out boxes.
"Can you pass me that box of antenna? It's just on the shelf there. Oh, yes. You can't beat a beetle when you're feeling down. Sometimes I think it's what it's all about, you know."
"What all?" said Ponder. The god swept an arm in an expansive gesture.
"Everything," he said cheerfully. "The whole thing. Trees, grass, flowers. What did you think it was all for?"
"Well, I didn't think it was for beetles," said Ponder. What about the elephant, for a start?"
The god already had a half-finished beetle in one hand. It was green.
"Dung,"
he said triumphantly. No head, when screwed onto a body, ought to make a sound like a cork being pushed into a bottle, but the beetle's did, in the hands of the god.
What? Said Ponder. That's rather a lot of trouble to go to just for dung, isn't it?
That's ecology for you, I'm afraid, said the god.
No, no, that can't be right, surely, said Ponder. What about the higher life forms?
Higher? Said the god. You mean like birds?
No, I mean like...
Ponder hesitated. The god had seemed remarkably incurious about the wizards, possibly because of their lack of resemblance to beetles, but he could see a certain amount of theological unpleasantness ahead.
Like apes, he said.
Apes? Oh, very amusing, certainly, and obviously the beetles have to have something to entertain them, but...
The god looked at him, and a celestial penny seemed to drop.
Oh, dear. You don't think they're the purpose of the whole business, do you?
I'd rather assumed that...
Dear me, the purpose of the whole business, you see, is in fact to be the whole business. Although,
he sniffed,
if we can do it all with beetles, I shan't complain.
But surely the purpose of... I mean, wouldn't it be nice if you ended up with some creature that started to think about the universe?
Good gravy, I don't want anything poking around, said the god testily. There's enough patches and stitches in it as it is. Without some clever devil trying to find more, I can assure you. No, the gods on the mainland have got that right at least. Intelligence is like legs. Too many and you trip yourself up. Six is about the right number, in my view.
But surely, ultimately, one creature might...
The god let go of his latest creation. It whirred up and along the rows and rows of beetles and slotted itself in between two that were almost, but not exactly, quite like it.
Worked that one out, have you?
He said.
Well, of course you're right. I can see you have quite an efficient brain.
Damn. There was a little sparkle in the air, and a bird appeared alongside the god. It was clearly alive, but entirely stationary, hanging in frozen flight. A flickering blue glow hovered around it. The god sighed, reached into a pocket, and pulled out the most complex-looking tool Ponder had ever seen. The bits that you could see suggested that there were other, even stranger bits that you couldn't, and that this was probably just as well.
However,
he said, slicing the bird's beak off, the blue glow simply closing over the hole,
if I'm going to get any serious work done, I'm really going to have to find some way of organizing the whole business. All I'm faced with these days is bills.
Yes. It must be quite expensive.
Big bills, short bills, bills for winkling insects out of bark, bills for cracking nuts, bills for eating fruit,
the god went on.
They're supposed to do their own evolving. I mean, that's the whole point. I shouldn't have to be running around all the time.
The god waved his hand in the air, and a sort of display stand of beaks appeared beside him. He selected one that, to Ponder, hardly looked any different from the one he'd removed, and used the tool to attach it to the hanging bird. The blue glow covered it for a moment, and then the bird vanished. In the moment that it disappeared, Ponder thought he saw its wings begin to move. And in that moment he knew that despite the apparent beetle fixation, here was where he'd always wanted to be, at the cutting edge of the envelope in the fast lane of the state of the art. He'd become a wizard because he'd thought that wizards knew how the universe worked, and Unseen University had turned out to be stifling. Take that business with the tame lightning. It had demonstrably worked. He made the bursar's hair stand on end and sparks crackle out of his fingers, and that was by using only one cat and a couple of amber rods. His perfectly reasonable plan to use several thousand cats tied to a huge wheel that would rotate against hundreds of rods had been vetoed on the ridiculous grounds that it would be too noisy. His carefully worked out scheme to split the thaum and thus provide endless supplies of cheap, clean magic had been quite unfairly sat upon because it was felt that it might make the place untidy. And that was even after he had presented figures to prove that the chances of the process completely destroying the entire world were no greater than being knocked down while crossing the street. And it wasn't his fault he said this just before the six-cart pile-up outside the university. Here was a chance to do something that made sense. Besides, he thought he could see where the god was going wrong.
"Excuse me," he said, "but do you need an assistant?"
"Frankly, the whole thing is getting out of hand," said the god, who was a wizard-class non-listener. "It's really getting to the point where I need an..."
"I say, this is a pretty amazing place."
Ponder rolled his eyes.
You could say that for wizards. When they walked into a place that was pretty amazing, they'd tell you, loudly.
Oh, said the god, turning around. This is the rest of your swarm, isn't it?
I'd better go and stop them, said Ponder, as the wizards fanned out like small boys in an amusement arcade, ready to press anything in case there was a free game left.
They poke things and then say, what does this do?
Don't they ask what things do before they poke them?
No, they say you'll never find out if you don't give them a poke, said Ponder darkly.
Then why do they ask?
They just do. And they bite things and then say, I wonder if this is poisonous, with their mouths full. And you know the really annoying thing? It never is.
How odd. Laughing in the face of danger is not a survival strategy, said the god.
Oh, they don't laugh, said Ponder gloomily. They say things like, you call that dangerous? It's not a patch on the kind of danger you used to get when we were lads, eh, senior wrangler? What? What? Remember when old Windows McPlunder?
He shrugged.
When old Windows McPlunder what? Said the god.
I don't know. Sometimes I think they make up the names. Dean, I really don't think you should do that.
The dean turned away from the shark, whose teeth he'd been examining.
Why not, Stibbons? He said.
Behind him, the jaw snapped shut. Only the Arch-Chancellor's legs were visible in the exploded elephant. There were muffled noises from inside the whale. They sounded very much like the lecturer in recent runes saying,
look at what happens when I twist this bit. See? That purple bit wobbles.
Amazing piece of work, said Ridcully, emerging from the elephant.
Very good wheels. You paint these bits before assembly, do you?
It's not a kit, sir, said Ponder, taking a kidney out of his hands and wedging it back in. It's a real elephant under construction.
Oh.
Being made, sir, said Ponder,
since Ridcully didn't seem to have got the message.
Which is not usual.
Oh. How are they, normally made, then?
By other elephants, sir.
Oh, yes.
Really? Are they? Said the god.
How? Those trunks are pretty nimble, even if I say so myself, but not really very good for delicate work.
Oh, not made like that, sir, obviously. By, you know, sex,
said Ponder, feeling a blush start.
Sex?
Then Ponder thought, Mono Island, oh dear.
Males and females,
he ventured.
What are they, then? Said the god.
The wizards paused.
Do go on, Mr. Stibbons, said the Arch-Chancellor. We are all ears, especially the elephant.
Well,
Ponder knew he was going red.
Well, how do you get flowers and things at the moment?
I make them, said the god, and then I keep an eye on them and see how they function, and then when they wear out I make an improved version based on experimental results.
He frowned.
Although the plants seem to be acting very oddly these days. What's the point of these seeds they keep making? I try to discourage it, but they don't seem to listen.
I think, they're trying to invent sex, sir, said Ponder. Sex is how you can, creatures can, they can make the next creatures.
You mean elephants can make more elephants?
Yes, sir.
My word! Really?
Oh, yes.
How do they go about that, then? Calibrating the ear waggling is particularly time-consuming. Do they use special tools?
Ponder saw that the dean was staring straight up at the ceiling, while the other wizards were also finding something apparently fascinating to look at that meant they could avoid one another's gaze.
In a way, said Ponder.
He knew that a sticky patch lay ahead and decided to give up.
But really, I don't know much about it.
And workshops, presumably, said the god.
He took a book from his pocket and a pencil from behind his ear.
Do you mind if I make notes?
The female,
Ponder tried.
Female?
Said the god obediently, writing this down.
Well, she, one popular way, she sort of makes the next one inside her.
The god stopped writing.
Now I know that's not right, he said. You can't make an elephant inside an elephant.
A smaller version,
Ah, now, once again, I have to point out the flaw.